Big news, or is it just the same old, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy, and along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, Barry. It's very, very good to be with you today, as always. I want to apologize for last week. If you were listening, there was some kind of a technical glitch. I think it was an automation error. If you listen to our show, you would have heard that everything started to play like it was supposed to. And it went to an advertisement, and it played your advertisement and my advertisement. And then when it cut back, it went to music, so our program didn't play. Our thanks to WLRY, who basically tries to make things operate as well as they can. Barry, having been to the studio and the transmitter, yes. It's amazing that one person essentially can run that thing. And we give our thanks to Mike because... he really has a rough job, and he didn't want to be there on the Saturday after Thanksgiving to make sure everything was running right, so it was on automation. And I think the automation just pulled a glitch. Now, what are we going to do? What are we going to do with that program? Well, you're probably going to hear it since it's a program on Thanksgiving. You'll probably hear it around Christmas time or New Year's. A time when we also don't want to be spend too much time doing things like that. So chances are that'll show up around Christmas or New Year's, and it'll be a very good, because it's what we give thanks for. And what you and I gave an hour-long program of what we were thankful for, and we asked people out there to tell us what they're thankful for. So you will
sure,
hear
absolutely.
It. You will hear it. You will hear it. So... that being said, now this week, and it's a, you know, there's an old Steve Martin thing where he made a thing about, because he played the banjo, and he still plays the banjo. If you've heard any of his recordings, he's not too bad. But he, in his comedy routine, he played the banjo, and he said it's impossible to do an unhappy song on the banjo. And he played one and said, "Oh, death and grief and sorrow and murder," while he's playing the banjo. And he was right. It sounded all happy. And it can be done. Just ask Ralph Stanley. Ralph Stanley used to do essentially the equivalent of the blues on the claw hammer, with a claw hammer pick on a banjo. But that being said, this is kind of a strange week where we're seeing a lot of stuff. Cascading down, and you know, I'm sitting here looking at it, and I said, okay, everybody got the shotgun out and sawed it off so they could get the widest possible scatter, and took it against Roy Moore, Judge Roy Moore, who's an Alabama Senate, U.S. Senate candidate down there, and they took it against Judge Roy Moore, and they ended up taking everybody out that was peripheral to him, and he's still standing. Now, you can take that as you will. The leftist media is trying to claim it's because the Alabama voters are a bunch of idiots, which we are pretty sure is not the case.
Is not the case. That's right.
Alabama voters may be a little better tuned to, what may very well be a set of false accusations, and the fact that the stories just aren't ringing true. You know, they're trying to make a case, and I've seen people falling for this, that a 30-year-old man wanted to go out with an 18 to 24-year-old woman. Well, okay, so what? The answer to that is, so what? A successful man who's looking for a younger wife. Big shock. I know I'm really taken aback. That used to be the common way of doing it. A man went out and made his way in the world, and then he went and found a wife who would bear him lots of children, and that tended to be a younger woman. So all of a sudden, you know, that's a bad thing, which I don't get. But if you look at the list of the people who have been hit by the scattergun, You got Matt Lauer, who just got fired. We're recording this on Thursday before it airs, who got fired from his Today Show gig yesterday. Garrison Keillor, who has been retired from Prairie Home Companion, but was writing a piece on writing, was doing a piece on writing for Minnesota Public Radio. He's fired.
Right. Well, he does a little thing like a 5-minute thing called the Writer's Almanac.
The Writer's Almanac,
and he's been doing that for years, yes, along with Prairie Home Companion. Now you're right. He's no longer hosting it. He stepped down, but they also run a series on NPR through Minnesota Public Radio called "The Best of a Prairie Home Companion," which are all the episodes that he was in. But Minnesota Public Radio made the announcement yesterday that because of all these allegations, which I guess must have some credibility in fact, they are completely severing ties, so they are no longer going to be running or supporting the Writer's Almanac or the Best of a Prairie Home Companion, and they've delinked from the online catalog and everything else. I mean, they basically have, it's called shunning. In the Amish, in the Mennonite world, that's called a shun.
And that is a shun because that is a tremendous revenue stream for Minnesota Public Radio and for NPR, National Public Radio, who gets a piece of that action. That means that Garrison Keillor is cut off from his main source of income because he had a residual deal that wouldn't end.
Oh, absolutely.
We don't know for sure. And again, I want to bring up something that, is important in this, and it's a distinction that people are losing or seem to be losing. And that is that an allegation is not a conviction. Now, in cases like Matt Lauer, this apparently was a well-known and well-hidden secret within NBC News for quite some time. I mean, like, possibly decades. That Lauer was essentially a dog. I read a story today that basically said he had a button he could push to lock his office door from his desk. So he would get an intern or somebody into his office, you know, somebody he desired, and he would lock the door so they couldn't escape.
Well, you know, in most jurisdictions, that's called kidnapping.
Most jurisdictions. Barry, I sat on a jury for just such a thing. Not exactly like that, where someone was held against their will in a room. And that is kidnapping, at least in Ohio.
Yeah,
by Ohio law.
Well, in many states.
And it's by federal law as well.
Any way that you prevent someone from being able to exit from a location, you can be brought up on kidnapping charges.
Exactly.
Even if it's in your own home, like you had in that situation that you were talking about, because we've talked about that before, or in your office. I mean, he could have stood up in front of the door and said, "Nope, you're not leaving until you do what X, Y, and Z." That action of blocking the exit would be considered kidnapping, even though he really didn't take the person anywhere else.
Yeah, it's not like...
Most people think of the idea of kidnapping is you grab someone off the street and you take them to an undisclosed location to be nefarious, but you don't even have to do that.
No. Yeah, you just hold them in a place against their will, and it's kidnapping.
Right. If you restrict their ability to freely move and to exit, then it's kidnapping.
Yep. And that's what a lot of people don't understand. And if somebody, I don't know what New York law is, and the Today Show is New York, essentially. I don't know what New York law is. If somebody really wanted to press the case, you might be able to bring a kidnapping charge. That's up to individual people who are making the allegations. The problem is, in these cases, how do you prove it? How do you prove it when you're essentially the only witness? This is one of the problems that we have with declaring innocence or guilt. Having sat on a jury, I am well aware that you need proof. There has to be proof. In fact, we found the fellow who was accused of kidnapping not guilty because The jury determined after hours and hours and hours of deliberations and rebuilding the scenario that the girl could have escaped from the situation she was in. Now, we did figure out that there was another situation that she could not have escaped from, and that we determined that the prosecutor argued the wrong case. At one point, he had her locked in a bathroom because we saw the place where he pushed her through the wall. And the only way to do that is if the bathroom door was closed, because the bathroom door open covered up the hole where her head and shoulders went through the wall. So, you know, it's a matter of arguing the correct case with the correct proof. Here's the problem. You've got recordings out there of Katie Couric doing interviews where she's saying that Matt Lauer pinched her behind a lot. And also him saying telling Meredith Vieira that while she was bent over picking something up or something, that he liked the view. That's the kind of thing that you may think in your head, because men are prone. If it's out there, you're going to look at it. So that's just pretty much the way it works. But you don't say things like that. You're really not supposed to say things like that. That's especially in a professional environment. It's one thing with your wife at home, and it's another thing in at your work. So, this is a problem. And he's not the only one. I don't know all the allegations against Garrison Keillor, but I understand that there are a bunch of them. Which is why Minnesota Public Radio just basically cut him off. Some of these guys are possibly being falsely accused, and some people are going to come out after the fact and make allegations. Essentially to sort of jump on the bandwagon. That's inevitable as well. Are there legitimates? Well, let's get the evidence out there. And I'm sure that NBC and NPR and NPR and other places, other media outlets, let's see who else got fired. Oh, NPR lost one of its division heads to these allegations. Al Franken is being combative about it. He's basically said, I'm sorry for the things I did. I don't remember doing them. How often do you say you're sorry for things you don't remember you did? And, but I'm not quitting. Well, okay, that's, are there calls for his resignation? Yes, there are. What would be the result of that? Who knows? A new senator from Minnesota, you know, what that exactly means, I don't know. Al Franken was a reliable liberal vote, very reliable. He and Elizabeth Warren and Chuck Schumer and some of the powerhouses in the Senate, Barbara Boxer and now Kamala Harris, could be counted on for caballing for any ultra-liberal cause you can think of. So what would happen? Yeah. John Conyers, another liberal icon, is also in trouble. Apparently, having done these things, and you've got these things multiple times for many, many years. I mean, John Conyers has been in the House of Representatives since forever, like in the 40s.
He may have been there that long. I'm not sure.
I could be wrong, but he's really, really, really old. I think he's in his 90s. And he has already announced he's not seeking re-election, which is fine. But there are people that are saying, no, you have to go. People in the caucus are telling him, no, you have to go, John. Again, what will that mean? Not much. He's from a reliably liberal district in the Detroit area. So he, even if they have a special election, he'll just be replaced by one of his trainees, somebody who's been under his wing for, many, many, many years, undoubtedly, you know. Again, are there Republicans falling? Yes, there are. Joe Barton from Texas. There are tweets of him saying salacious things on tweets to women. So, I mean, there is no party exclusivity here. But the people they were hoping to bring down are the people who are damaging liberal causes by far the most. Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein has been running essentially a rape mill with his business in Hollywood for over 35 years. And he finally got busted. And what's that doing? Well, it's depriving liberal politicians of a reliable donor. He was a bundler, and he gave tens of millions of dollars and got tens of millions more, if not even more than that, for the DNC, Democratic National Committee, and for Hillary Clinton, and for various Senate candidates, Kamala Harris, and name somebody. They can all tell you that Harvey Weinstein, but they don't want to tell you this, that Harvey Weinstein was a major contributor. And the Weinstein Group, I'm trying to remember what Weinstein has been. It's now the Weinstein Company, but they've had Miramax. That pedigree, you can look that up if you want to. IMDb, if you want to look up Weinstein's pedigree in business. But these guys are falling right and left. And you're catching other people, other actors, Casey Affleck, Ben Affleck.
Oh, okay.
They're all over the place. It's interesting that some of these icons, especially in the news media, I mean, Geraldo Rivera came out, and who's had his own allegations in the past, came out in defense of Matt Lauer. Well, okay. Talk about not being able to see the forest for the trees. There it is. So how does this tie up? I mean, it's always been a problem when women come into the workplace, men desire them if they're attractive. And sometimes even if they're not all that attractive, they're available. Men will chase women. Are there rules of decorum for that? There always have been. And in the past, people self-policed for the most part. And when they didn't, women would go to bosses and complain. And if there was a strong moral fiber running through the corporation or the company or even the little business, that person would be talked to and possibly fired if he continued this harassment. I don't want to make it up too Pollyanna-ish, because there have always been these things going on, and there have always been guys who have told women they needed to sleep their way to the top. And in fact, who was it? A female news anchor came out and said she was given that advice. Sleep your way to the top. Wow, is all I can say. That's just beyond the pale, I think.
Yeah. That's the whole point, Chuck. We've got this incredibly hypocritical double standard in our culture right now. And there's a reason. Because when you reject God, you become double-minded. Because we are made in God's image, after his likeness. And therefore, you know, we are, in essence, we should be tuned in to the things of God. But because of sin and because of our flesh, we're not, and we rebel against it. But we rebel while trying to create a facade of morality outside of the God of the universe who created morality. So we're double-minded as a culture. And that's the reason why all of these things, if you think about it, we have probably one of the most sexualized pornographic cultures in history. Yes, I mean, maybe the ancient Greeks and Romans might have been a little bit more because, you know, they were painting new, you know, figures on all of their pottery and things of that nature. But frankly, we do just the same thing. I mean, why is the, you know, pornography industry makes more money than, you know, pretty much all the sporting events that, you know, that come out and all of the other, you know, entertainment options out there combined? Porn brings in more money, more revenue. So, you know, we have a culture, and we've talked about this before, you know, all of our advertising. Every bit of our advertising goes to, you know, selling something with sex appeal or, you know, with scantily clad individuals or promising you, you know, great improvements in your attractiveness or your ability to, you know, bring home, you know, your desired options for your life. But then we, as a culture, are aghast.
Yes.
When people take advantage of that, and in their environments, whether it's the Matt Lauers of the world or the John Conyers of the world or the Harvey Weinsteins of the world or the Al Frankens of the world, or, you know, the Kevin Spaceys of the world, and the, or the Garrison Keillors of the world, we sit there in abject horror that, oh, we can't believe that they would do something like that. Why not? I ask, why not?
Yeah, exactly.
Why should we be shocked? Why should we put on, as a culture, what really is a hypocritical stance? We want our cake and eat it too. We want to have the constant bombardment and the, you know, saturation of all the sexualized imagery and innuendo and out and out pornography in our culture. I mean, hey, look at primetime television. That's all, pretty much that's all the farther you really got to go to. I mean, the stuff that's on primetime television today, Chuck, you know, back 30 years ago, wouldn't have been able to been shown.
No, it would have been on HBO, and it would have been
it would have been only on pay.
Exactly, TV. Would have been on pay TV.
But now across our entire airwaves, you know, you can tune in on any night of the week, and you know, and have, you know, homosexual, you know, two homosexuals in bed together.
Yes,
you know. Somebody who's a serial monogamist, i.e., a philandering adulterer, you know, or, you know, on some programs, and of course, I think maybe these still are on cable, you know, we have the polyamory movement. Well, Chuck, if it's all about self-gratification and self, you know, appreciation and fulfilling all of those carnal desires, why in the world are we as a culture, especially when you start seeing, you know, all of these things? And again, it's because ultimately we are made in God's image after his likeness. We can't escape it. God is real. God exists. God is sovereign. God's rules still apply to us, even though we rebel against him and we try to cast off those rules and regulations. When something jars us incredibly that shows us that our false constructs will collapse around our ears as soon as somebody decides to push it far enough. And that's what happened here. People tried, these people pushed it because they were in positions of power and authority, and they were in, you know, in areas where they had access to, you know, a steady stream of potential victims. And they gave into that temptation.
Yeah. Yep.
They sought out that temptation. You know, you can see some of these accounts, this wasn't, you know, these weren't accidental things where, you know, okay, you hear about sometimes these affairs, well, you know, we were working really closely together in close quarters for a long time and it just happened. Well, that isn't how, that isn't quite the way these things just happen.
I've heard the it just happened thing. No, it didn't just happen. You both wanted it and you both acquiesced and you made it happen. But these are seem to be, a lot of these are problems with one party wants it and the other party engages reluctantly just because they think it's going to advance their career, which says a lot about what they think about themselves versus what they think about their career. They're willing, they're willing to surrender a piece of themselves in order to advance, you know, to make sure they have a good retirement and good benefits. Wow. That's an entirely different case of two people who are working together on a project and both decide, wow, this would be a wonderful person to get together with. And it quote unquote just happens. It doesn't just happen. There's a buildup. Everybody recognizes it's happening. Inside the relationship, they all feel the sexual tension, and at one point they give in to it, but it didn't just happen. That's the problem with these things. Now, are there going to be cases where one party or another says, well, I did give in, and now later, you know, 6, 10, 25 years later, I've decided that I really wasn't the consensual party in this, even though you may have been. Yeah, that's going to happen too. That's the problem you run into with some people who have reputations in the workplace for being aggressive sexually in the workplace. It does catch up to you. And in fact, it can catch you with people that were probably very willing at the time and have decided they're going to try to cash in now that the ones who weren't willing are getting ready to sue. They're going to join in and sue too and see if they can't collect. That does happen. And how are you going to separate those out? And the answer is you're probably not. NBC is going to pay out a lump sum.
Oh, absolutely.
And pay everybody that complains.
Well, they pretty much have to. Well, speaking of paying everybody that complains, you know, they're not the only one who's doing that. You know, you and I talked about this earlier.
Yeah.
And this is kind of, let's shift that gear slightly, kind of because there's a couple of other things that have been going on. There was a big announcement, I think, maybe yesterday, that the NFL, you know, the National Football League or the not feeling loyal league, I guess is what I'm calling it now, you know, because of all this thing with the protest of the anthem and the kneeling and everything else. And of course, that's had an impact on the NFL. You know, their revenues are down a little. There are a number of stadiums that are looking somewhat empty, although for the life of me, I think mainly what they do is they go up to the Brown Stadium and film that one when they're having a home game. Because I heard the other day that tickets for a Browns game were going for $6 a piece online.
Wow.
But the NFL and Roger Goodell made an announcement, and this was something, obviously, the owners had some meetings, and they have decided that because, you know, they have a social conscience, Chuck, and they understand the deep desire of people for justice. They've announced that they're going to donate $100 million. That's an awful lot of money and an awful lot of zeros, Chuck, to social justice causes like Black Lives Matter and others. You know, Soros-backed organizations. That the NFL is going to take the money that they get from all their revenues, television and concessions and the percentages they get from jersey sales and pay-per-view stuff and whatever else it might be, and obviously ticket sales from fans. And they're going to take that money and they're going to hand it over to social justice causes so that there can be more advocacy for, you know, disrespecting the country that you live in by, you know, taking a knee or you know, rejecting to, you know, to recognize that, you know, there are people who are paying your salary in those stands who served and have, you know, served in the military or served in domestic, you know, fire, police, what have you, that flag and the idea of what that of what the flag stands for means a lot to them. But, you know, we've got these, you know, players like the Colin Kaepernicks of the world and the Richard Shermans up in Seattle who, you know, I saw this thing about Richard Sherman, who's a player for the Seattle Seahawks, did this, maybe it was after a game, but he got to talking about how he just basically, they were just like plantation slaves, and, you know, they didn't have, and they just had to do what the owners and the coaches told them to do. And this is a guy who makes $20 million a year. Now, is there really, I mean, is there any legitimate connection between a $20 million a year person playing a game and people who their freedom was completely curtailed? They were captured. They were put into bondage. They were, you know, forced to, you know, into hard manual labor in many circumstances. Is there really, I mean, is the only connection because the melanin content in his skin is about the same level as the melanin content in their skin?
Yeah.
I mean, let's just be quite frank about this. This is getting to the point of absurdity. I mean, you've got multimillionaires, Colin Kaepernick's another one of them, who basically are acting like, and what they're really doing, it's not so much disrespecting, you know, the country or the flag or the military law enforcement. They're actually disrespecting their own ancestors, people who were enslaved, people who were sold into captivity by their own people to Europeans who then, you know, created a slave trade. Folks, if you do history, you realize something. There's no legitimate connection between the pampered class today, these multimillionaires who have a quote-unquote social justice conscience, and their ancestry who did have something to moan and be sorrowful about because of what happened to them. But you're really disrespecting them as well. It's just, it's beyond me, Chuck. I just, okay, maybe it's because I'm, you know, I can't relate ethnically, and that's fine, you know, but the point is that there has to come a point where you have to say, how about instead of taking that money, that $100 million, to give it to social justice causes, which is a bunch of liberal academicians and think tanks and special interest groups who are going to be getting hundreds of thousands of dollars in annual salary and not using it for anything more than creating more chaos in the culture. How about you take it and you donate to food banks or to pregnancy care centers or to adoption agencies to help people in your community and other communities have a better quality of life? That's truly where you're going to create more equity and justice in the world, rather than handing it off to a bunch of liberal ivory tower academicians and socialist communist groups funded by George Soros to foment all of this clash of the cultures.
Yeah.
It's just absolutely just mind-boggling. So, honestly, Chuck, I used to like watching pro football. I did. And had teams in both leagues. I love Minnesota in the NFC and really liked the Bengals, even though they were woeful.
Yes. In
the AFC, you know, and I had the teams I couldn't stand at all. I didn't like Dallas in the NFC, and certainly can't stand the Patriots in the AFC. But when it gets right down to it, I quit. All this stuff, I'm like, what we have is a bunch of pampered millionaires being hypocrites.
I'll go for that.
Roger Goodell just put a nail in the coffin of my ever giving them a second chance. As far as I'm concerned, in professional football, and then you can probably lump professional basketball on this road, is a waste of time. There are more important things to be doing in our lives than wasting 3, 5, 6, 8 hours a day, or more for some, or any other day, Monday night, Thursday, whatever it might have been with football, to base the whining of a bunch of pampered rich people. Okay, yeah. I guess maybe that I'm insensitive. I'm intolerant. And because I don't have, and because my melanin content in my skin's a lot lower, then I'm technically already a racist, aren't I? Again, you know, this is a situation where instead of us all trying to work together to solve common problems, you have interests like the Soroses of the world, like these liberal academicians, like these social justice warriors, who the only way they can profit is by creating dissension and creating turmoil. And that's what's happening. Okay, folks. If you want to figure out what's happening with all of these things, whether it's the national, you know, the protests of the anthem, the kneeling, all this other fun stuff, the marches in the streets by women wearing pink hats, tie it back to who profits from it. And I mean profits as in not just power, but actually money. Because if you think about it, Chuck, how did George Soros build his billions of dollar empire?
He basically bought and sold currency and brought those currencies down after short buying them.
But how did he target? He targeted them in countries where it was an easy way to push to get civil unrest going.
Well, that's true.
Because once you get civil unrest going, the currency valuation started. Look at what's going on right now down in Venezuela.
I think Hungary was the first. Was the first, and that's his native country.
Yes. Yeah, he did it. Well, he started at home first. He tried it out at home before he took it on the road. That's like a garage band. You know, you play at home in your garage before you go out and do venues.
Yeah, you do weddings.
But the point is, why do you think we're all this stuff is happening here in the U.S.? Because the one currency that would be the most difficult to destabilize is the American dollar, because it's the standard. And if you can destabilize the dollar and create a currency crisis in the U.S., what does that do as far as a cascade effect?
Oh, my gosh. As goes the U.S., so goes the world. And it's been that way. It was like that way in 1929.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why was it that way in 1929? Because the United States was such an economic and production powerhouse that once our economy went south, the world economy went south. The Depression was worldwide. The British felt it. The Europeans felt it. The Asians felt it. Everybody felt it. And, you know, if you want to get into how that happened, I mean, everybody blames the stock market crash in 1929. The 1929 stock market crash was a direct result of what was happening at the Federal Reserve level, which was a sudden tightening of the currency. The Federal Reserve, which was a fairly new entity at that time. Remember, the Federal Reserve Bank basically only got established in 1913. And by 1929... we had a what amounts to a Federal Reserve System manipulated depression, which was actually starting to work itself out until Franklin Roosevelt came in and quote unquote saved us by extending the depression until 1940. Gee, thanks.
Absolutely.
But that being the case, what happened was the Federal Reserve System essentially created an inflationary cycle where they cheap credit, and everybody got into debt, and a lot of them went into debt to buy stock. A lot of people went into debt to buy stock, but what happened in suddenly the Federal Reserve says, hey, we've got really bad inflation right now. What do we need to do about it? And they said, we need to put the brakes on the economy. So they raised interest rates. They raised the what they call the discount rate. And what did that do? Well, everybody suddenly put the brakes on. Well, you go from 100 to 25 miles an hour, all of a sudden, what happens? There's a lot of mayhem. Tires screech and cars go out of control, and all kinds of bad things happen when you do that. That's the problem with boom and bust cycles, and that's the whole reason why this is way beyond the scope of this program, and it's way beyond the scope of my understanding of how I have a rudimentary understanding of it, but that's why the Austrian economists were able to predict the meltdown in 2008. Because they understood the boom and bust cycle better, apparently, than the Federal Reserve System does, which isn't a shock. I'll be quite honest. It's the Federal Reserve System apparently operates a lot on, like, voodoo. They stick pins in dolls and stuff because they certainly don't really understand how you can claim that they've done a great job of keeping us from going into a depression for some certain period, but the fact is you can't prove that by something that didn't happen. It's like, look what we've prevented. Well, we don't know if you prevented it or not. You may have contributed to the problems that we have, and in fact the Austrian economists would argue that you have, that you've contributed to all of our recessionary periods by these periods of boom and bust. Basically, the corrections that go on during a recessionary period are necessary to make up for the fact that there was irrational spending and investment during a boom period. This is why I'm worried about. I see today that the stock market hit 24,000. Well, that worries me a little bit, and it worries me because the higher they all are, the further they have to fall. If you get my drift. So how are these things all tied together? Well, they're all tied together because we have ignored God's, essentially, his rules for economics, for human sexuality, for the way we are supposed to interact in society with one another. As we become less and less dependent upon God for our guidance and more dependent upon ourselves and society and social mores and that kind of thing for guidance, the further and further and further we get away from how God would have us run society, and the further and further and further away we get from stability and a society that works. You talked about George Soros. We've talked about the NFL. I have a friend named Charlie Smith. You know Charlie.
I know Charlie very well, yes.
Charlie's a great guy. He's a very intelligent man. He's extremely intelligent. He's got a life story that you can't, some of the things he can tell you, it's just amazing. But he's an older man now, and he was at my house at Thanksgiving. He and my mother are very, very, very good friends. I would call Charlie a member of my family. Essentially, he is a black man, and he's a black man who's a conservative. But he was telling me stories this weekend about when he was a much younger man. He was in his 30s and living in Los Angeles. And he was living in the Watts area in the mid-60s. Well, what happened in Watts in 1965, Barry?
I believe there was like a little riot or something.
Yeah, it was the Watts riots. And Charlie, telling me stories. But he said, in Los Angeles, he goes, I would be driving down the street in my little Volkswagen Bug. At night, it'd be like 2 a.m. And he goes, I would get pulled over by the police, who'd take me out and roust me. And he goes, one night I got put in a holding cell. I said, what for? He said, because he just basically was right out with it. And Charlie, is a realist on these things. He's like, because he's lived them. He says, because we had a couple of cracker cops who basically wanted to put me in jail for the night. And he says, they did. And in the morning, they just said, you can go now. And I said, what was it all about? He says, well, we're investigating something. What were they investigating? Well, that was, he was never told that. And why was he pulled over? Well, because he was a black man out driving in the wrong neighborhood at 2 o'clock in the morning. Does that kind of thing happen? Yeah. Do are blacks submitted to that kind of thing more than white people are? You bet they are. Let's not kid ourselves that, you know, we've completely eradicated racism from our society. Ha ha ha. The problem
no,
is
that's not true. But
yes, and again, that goes away from God's plan. We're not supposed to. This is not a racial thing. Race is an artificial concept. It's simply God gave people that live in places where there's more sunshine better protection against the sun. They have darker skin. People who have really, really white skin are generally from really, really far north or really, really far south climes. That's the bottom line. And all this other stuff, melanin makes people do this and blah, blah, blah. Do cultural things pop up, subcultures? Because, for instance, do blacks have a subculture because they weren't allowed to engage in the white culture? Yeah, you bet they do. Same thing comes with the other different racial groups that have come in and either that have been separated out or have separated themselves out from the normal culture. So are there subcultures? Yeah, there are. Do they behave in certain ways? Yeah. Is that genetic? No, it's not. It's cultural. For both good or bad. And different cultures adopt different parts of other subcultures. One of the reasons we have Santa Claus, big fat Santa Claus with a big white beard and he very white and a little red suit with a black belt is because we adopted that from German culture.
Mm-hmm.
The reason we have Christmas trees, German culture.
German culture, yeah.
Who was Santa Claus? Santa Claus was either North African or West Asian. What color was he? He was probably black. And what did he do? He provided dowries for the legend is that a dowry was provided for women who couldn't afford a dowry to get married. That's where the gift giving thing comes from. So we adopt all these things and convert them into other things. Like basically, you ask some people what Christmas is, it's the worship of Santa Claus. Well, you could say that. You wouldn't be far off. Certainly isn't the birth of Christ unless you talk to people who are in the church and are involved in that kind of thing. But yeah, is there a complaint to be made about social justice in some cases? Yeah, there are. Do you riot and burn your own neighborhoods down because of it? That's dumb. Do you run people of other cultures, like Asians, out of your neighborhood because they're the ones who run the convenience stores in your neighborhood? Folks, that's what happened in Ferguson, Missouri. That's how it all got started. The guy who got shot there had strong arm robbed a convenience store run by an Asian man. That's how it all started. And then he tried to grab a cop's gun. Well, that's not going to go well for you. While he was high, by the way, that's not going to go well for you. And how that all of a sudden turns into giving $100 million to some of the causes aren't too bad. The United Negro College Fund. Okay. Yeah. Well, just give money to the United Negro College Fund. That's not a problem. But some of the other groups, oh my goodness. I was looking before we almost had a computer crash here. I was looking at some of the things the NFL is going to give money to. Oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Far left, ultra left groups, that kind of thing. So once again, as we walk away from God's ways of treating one another, things pop up. And as we ignore him in creating solutions, we run into trouble like this. What's this going to do for the NFL? I think it's going to damage it probably almost beyond repair. The NFL will not exist in 10 years in the form it exists in now. It's sort of like...
No, as a matter of fact, I'm not even sure it'll take 10 years.
I don't think so either. I'm giving it 10 years because I thought, for instance, a lot of newspapers would have stopped publishing by now, but they haven't. I thought the Dispatch would be down to 3 days a week. And instead, they're
well. I mean, if you actually look at the real news that is in there, it would only be about 3 days a week worth.
Yeah, and it's down to a tabloid.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the Dispatch, and I'm glad you kind of threw that segue in there. I don't know if you realized you did that.
I kind of did.
You threw
it,
me a segue. You know, the Dispatch had an interesting article in it yesterday that a group, the Ohio Christian Alliance, out of Northeast Ohio, Chris Long's organization, had put out and done a press release, at least. I don't think they did a press conference, but they did a press release basically calling on the legislative inspector general and maybe the attorney general as well to open investigations as to who knew what when in relation to the sexual scandals that have been happening at the State House with Senator Height and with Representative Goodman and other things that have been going on. And I found that very interesting because obviously they should go ahead and do as they see fit and call for these things. And basically they created a statement called the Statement from the Ohio Christian Alliance on the Moral Crisis at the Ohio State House. And again, it gets right down to that whole fact that I just mentioned to you, Chuck, that look at our culture. Look at the things around our culture and then wonder why we have a moral crisis. And so I appreciate what they did. But again, what I'm looking at is this whole issue of what exactly is going to be happening anymore that could be done, especially in these two circumstances, with the representative and with the senator, other than the victims, whether alleged or actual victims of these activities, to file civil suits or criminal suits, if it led to that, against these individuals. At this point, the legislative inspector general, what they're actually trying to find is, well, did the leadership in the chambers know that this was going on ahead of time and just basically look the other way? I don't know the answer to that, Chuck. I mean, I could speculate that, yeah, that very well could have happened, because when you get into a dynamic with a bunch of people and it's a power dynamic and you're hoping to keep power, the last thing you want is some kind of scandal that comes up to basically derail your opportunity to keep power. But on the other side of the coin, how much more damage does it do if you try to cover something up like this and it finally comes out later?
Well,
I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Now, of course, it was opened up, and there were a handful of people who signed this letter, along with the Christian Alliance. There were a few others and some that we know. But really what it gets right down to is they're making this request that they investigate this and figure out if there are any crimes committed. Well, from what I read of the Senate version, harassment and intimidation, as long as he didn't trap the individual into a room or something and not let her out, then the kidnapping thing, which we talked about earlier, would apply. And since he didn't follow up and actually, as far as I can tell from, and this was from the deposition that she gave to an attorney who the director of Legislative Service Commission then made public, the 5-page deposition, that there was some physical contact, but unless she wants to file an assault charge, there's probably nothing of a criminal nature that could be done. Now, if she went to the leadership of the Senate, the Senate president's office or the chief of staff, and made a complaint and asked that something be done about it, and they didn't do it, then, you have, basically, it's, to me, it's dereliction of duty, but I'm not sure it rises to the level of anything criminal. The Goodman situation, there's a lot of things about stuff that happened before he was a legislator, and then a bunch of texts that he fired back and forth with young men late at night while his wife was sleeping. None of that rises to criminal activity. And from what I could tell, everybody, including the individual he supposedly had some sort of inappropriate conduct with in his office sometime in the last couple, 3 months, were all adults, and it was consensual.
Yeah, the complaint seems to have come from a third party.
Yes. And so, again, I'm not sure that there's a situation here where, now, very well, there could be. There could be an entire culture of corruption going on up there where it's just basically a great point for finding, you know, bringing these young college students in the page in the intern program, and these kids fresh out of college coming in wanting to be on staff because they think that's a stepping stone up the political ladder. And for some, it is.
It is, yeah.
And for some, it's not. But I don't necessarily think that that's basically, you know, created a meat market situation in the halls of the legislative chambers in Ohio, where that's the reason or that's the recruitment pitch to get these young people in there. Now, do young people, certain young people, younger people, I mean, and there's all kinds of ages who work at the State House, who work on staff. It isn't all like young 20-somethings working on staff. There are older staffers. There are people who are more mature, who are wiser, who are, you know, there are some who've worked and retired, and now they're doing this because they're friends with the legislator or, yeah, you know, they're really good at what they do. So, you know, you've kind of got an entire weird mix going through this whole legislative thing. But in reality, I mean, Chuck, you've been down to the State House with me.
Okay? Yeah, sure.
Right?
Uh-huh.
There are certain individuals who believe that they need to call attention to themselves through their mode, manner of dress, and the way they carry themselves. And that's both staff and sometimes members.
You know? Yeah.
So, you know, but the point is, all they're doing is basically filling a role that they believe is legitimate or the standard because of what they're being fed in our sexualized culture, which is ridiculous. Again, it gets right back to the hypocrisy of our culture. We want uninhibited and unfettered access to all of this lasciviousness all the time through our media, our entertainment, our music, the advertising that we get, the marketing that we're pushed on. And then we expect everybody to basically act like, well, and I'm going to say it, I'm not trying to be derogatory, act like Puritans when they're around everybody else.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, there's a little bit of potentiality of more than this all fitting on one foot. Now, there are many instances where it's not. Okay? There are instances where an individual just is, their thinking is completely turned upside down. And for some reason, they're under a delusion that they're the best thing since sliced bread. And so therefore, that people should just acquiesce to whatever they want them to do. And yep. Then they make these overtures to these women and these young ladies or men or whatever else it is. Just fully expecting that, well, hey, you know, you should just go ahead and give me what I want because, well, hey, I'm the best thing around. It doesn't happen that way.
Right.
You know, it shouldn't happen that way. It does happen that way.
Yeah.
But again, what happened with the statement that the Christian Alliance put out was that immediately the House Speaker came back and through his spokesperson and basically kind of slammed the group. Which I don't think was a very smart move, because I think what that signals is that maybe this is hitting a little closer to home than they're comfortable with.
Yeah.
And maybe there is something to investigate.
Yep.
Because you would think you would just come out and say, you know, we're as appalled as everybody else is, and we're working hard to get this done. We thank you for you know, calling for a stronger look into this. We're doing everything we can do, and we're happy to cooperate in this and want to make sure that no crimes were committed. No, you turn around and attack the messenger. I think that was a massive, massive problem.
It's a PR error. Yeah, it's a terrible error.
Well, not even just a PR error. I think it's a problem that maybe points out that there's a good reason for them to make this call.
Yeah. That could be true.
And it's a sad thing. But when you walk the halls, you know, you hear well, did you hear about so-and-so? I'm getting to the point where I'm just like, I'm not even sure I think I want to hear this.
Yeah.
It's like, because whether it is, there's legitimate truth to it or not, I'm not the one who makes those decisions.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to sit as the judge and jury and potential executioner of these actions, because that's the responsibility of the leadership of those chambers.
Exactly.
And if they're failing and it comes out the fact that they were obfuscating or dissimulating on these things, then they will pay a political price.
Yeah. Hey.
And they might pay a legal price as well if they're tied into creating a culture that allowed someone to be assaulted or harassed.
Well, that's a good place to end, because, and we have to end it because we're out of time.
I figured.
Yeah. Well, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And we ask that you join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.